today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, lost bags may have a new way to be found, and we discuss a few ways the election may impact your travels in the coming months. Those stories and more next in the news.
Mark, have you ever heard of the airline hack known as check-in chicken? It's a way that we've mentioned before to perhaps get a premium seat on the plane without having to pay for it. More in our Smarter Traveler segment coming up at 11:25.
At 11:35, we're off to Istanbul to connect with our favorite consumer advocate, Chris Elliott, to discuss a variety of topics, everything from robo-taxis to vacation planning by AI.
And at 11:50, we are joined by our travel gal, Sydney, from The Poodle Booked It. Sydney has some great information on Airbnb and other vacation rentals to make you a smarter traveler.
Fall is turning to winter. Travelers are busy planning their next adventure. We are here to help. We are the Travel Guys.
Hey there, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. We've got some good stuff for you today. We're going to cover all sorts of spectrums of travel. But before we get to that, Mark, what kind of week did you have? I understand, I know it's been a few days, but you had a pretty spectacular Sunday last week.
Yeah, I went out and visited our friends out at Rudy's. You know, we've been talking about them for a while on the program, and so I'll give them. You are a semi-regular there, but me, I'm not, even though I'm fairly close. So I went with a buddy, and we had dinner there last Sunday night, and man, I'll tell you what, that's just a good place to eat. I just want to tell you. And the other thing is, the clam chowder is as good as anywhere. I mean, you could go to Boston and not get clam chowder as good as that. So I was really impressed. I was proud to be. They didn't know I was a travel guy or anything. I just made a reservation and went in and had dinner and left. And so, you know, there was no special, you know, celebrity treatment or anything. But anyways, it was, I snuck in and snuck out.
All right.
Had the halibut, and my buddy had the prime rib, so we kind of surfed and turfed it between the two of us.
All right. Did you sit in the front room, or did they stick you back in the captain's room?
We were back in the back. In fact, Tyler mentioned, he said, boy, are we going back to the freeway here, or where are we going? But, well, you know, because Rudy's was originally at one place, and then they added a room, and they added a room, and so over the years, Rudy's has gotten bigger. Not recently, but
yeah.
it's a bigger place than it looks like on the outside. But boy, we sure had a good dinner there. So I will place my endorsement on my 2024 endorsement on Rudy's. And if you go there and you like clam chowder, just go there. that would be my wisdom.
Yeah, well, you know, your point about add-ons and so forth over the years, didn't know much about that, but you have to watch yourself because when you come in, when you go past the fish tank into the bar area, there's a little uphill, okay? In fact, as older folk, they'll always say, watch your step, and so we'll sneak in there, and then when you go into the next room, it's either another uphill or a downhill.
Rudy's is not inexpensive. Bring your wallet. But, you know, good things sometimes cost a few dollars. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it was really a good dinner. So 5 stars to Rudy's. Thank you for a wonderful dinner last Sunday, even though you didn't know I was there.
Yeah, and so you'll know this is not the commercial. This is just Mark and Tom talking about Rudy's. Okay, well, let's do it. At the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date in the travel news. And with today's travel news, as always, once again, Mark Hoffman. Mark?
They were building, Tom, turns out, a Disneyland out in the middle of the country. This is in Oklahoma. It's stalled a couple times. I've seen some different words about it, and I haven't mentioned it because I didn't think that it might ever happen, and it looks like that might be true. Construction of the $2.5 billion American Heartland theme park in Veneta, Oklahoma, which is it's on Route 66, actually, which is to pack roller coasters, an indoor water park, a 300-room hotel, and an RV park into a footprint that would rival Disney's Magic Kingdom theme park in size, has stalled a year after groundbreaking, with the opening likely delayed until 2029. They're waiting for permits. Yeah. Anyways, we'll let you know if that ever happens, but you might have another option to go to, especially if you know folks in Oklahoma.
Now, you seem to know the area that they're thinking about putting this in. Mm-hmm. Is it really close to large population?
It's not too far from Oklahoma City. And it's reasonably close. I would call it semi-rural.
Probably okay. Area. I mean, you're gonna put in a major theme park, like a Disneyland or whatever. You want to make sure that there are a lot of folks within 100 miles or less.
Yeah, well, it's kind of between, you got Kansas City's not too terribly far away. St. Louis would be more than 100 miles. But anyways, we'll keep an eye on that, let you know if anything happens. Airport lounges are big business. They bring in loads of cash for airlines. If you have admission privileges to an airline lounge, you may have run into overcrowding, particularly in hub airports where, you know, you've paid for a yearly or a lifetime or even a daily pass and you can't get in. Or your status with the airline hypothetically allows you to be able to have admission to the lounge and you can't get in. I don't know that that's I haven't talked to the guys in Sacramento that run the two lounges in terminals A and B in recent times, but when I last spoke to them about this time last year, they weren't seeing any overcrowding challenges there. Of course, you know, people, when you're going into an airline lounge in an airport, oftentimes you're on an hour and a half layover, so you don't have a lot of time unless your flight has gotten, you know, lost or something like that. You're on an indefinite delay. But anyway, these lounges bring in a lot of money. And they are being built rapidly in different airports around the country, and they are tremendously popular. But as as travelers are finding out increasingly, just because it says that you can get in doesn't always mean that you can get into the lounge. So I find that to be a really strange thing, Tom. You got an hour layover in the airport. You got to move from gate to gate. Your other flight starts boarding 30, 40 minutes before it leaves. So you've really only got 20, 30 minutes. You might have to tinkle. You might have to grab something to eat if you're on two coach flights and you're going all the way across the country. I don't see where the lounge comes in, but I will tell you there are Clayton Whitehead of my staff, our road warrior here, he has a lounge membership at United and loves it dearly.
Well, you know, you mentioned food. Generally, those lounges provide you with food and beverage. So, you know, you can do all of that there. If you have a layover and the layover is extensive, I would think that would be the best place to take advantage of the lounge. You're not necessarily going to, you know, do the one out at SAC International for your short wait to get on your plane. But I hear where you're coming from. We'll have to have Clayton chime in sometime and give us the update on the Uniteds.
Here's an interesting story about how lost bags may have a new way to be found. You know how some of us put Apple AirTags or other, there are competitors to that now, but a way of basically when I'm traveling, my phone tells me where my bag is, and sometimes it's in the belly of the airplane. You know, Mark, your bag has been separated from you, and here's where it is. So if I got to my destination and my bag didn't show up, I would immediately be able to tell you what city it was in, what building it was in, things of that sort. We're now working on a system, apparently Apple is, to where you will be able to allow the airline, if you know where the bag is, and you're trying to tell them, and they're saying, well, you know, it's just lost, and we'll find it, and we'll get it to you, and you're like, no, I know exactly where it is. I can see it on my phone where the bag, I can tell you what building it's in and, you know, pretty precisely where the bag is located. And so what they're working on is a system that will allow you to allow the airline to tap into your phone and be able to see what you can see. So they could say, oh, okay, yeah, here's where your bag is. Let's go get it and we'll get it to you right away. Would that not be a cool use of technology?
Wow, and that seems so straightforward. I don't know.
I'm surprised nobody thought of it before now, kind of is my feeling. But anyway, it is a way that would allow you to have something that you already have. And if you don't have an Apple tag or something like that in your bag or whatever your carry-on is that you're in an airport, why then shame on you. That's really a smarter traveler, no-brainer. Because that way, you know, you walk off in the airport and you get down the, and you're like, oh my God, I forgot my suitcase or I forgot my briefcase or whatever. And well, now you, your phone will tell you exactly where it is. And if somebody has picked it up and walked off with it, your phone will tell you exactly where it is in the airport. So kind of a good thing. All right, let's move on here. Real ID. Remember this, Tom? We've been talking about this. We've been on the air for 16 years. I think pretty close to all of that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, not too long. Certainly for a good 10 years. But go on. I have a little bit to add to renewing Real IDs.
Okay. Real ID Act came about in 2005. In 2008, it was decided that it would be implemented. This is a Department of Homeland Security thing to get everybody's ID with the same clearances and the same security level and all that kind of jazz. But it would require everyone to get a new driver's license in order to accommodate this. We have seen many deadlines come and go before COVID, during COVID, after COVID. Right now, we're looking at a May 2025 deadline. Research has shown that, told them that almost nobody has gotten this ID, probably because they figure they'll just push it back again. And so that's what they're talking about doing, is pushing it back 2 years. But this time, really getting after folks and trying to really get people on board. I'm going to suggest to you that in order to do that, push it back 6 months or 9 months and then tell people, look, you got to have this, or and really get on and put up signs at the airport, announcements on planes, stuff like that, because you get out there and you have 10 or 15% of the population doesn't have the right ID, you're going to have massive, massive problems at the airport. So, I mean, incredible problems that would trickle down through the whole system.
My wife recently had to renew her driver's license. It finally came due, and she had the Real ID. You go online, you start looking around, especially if you're over 70, there are your special rules that you got to do, and you got to take a test online and then go in and get a picture taken. But nowhere does it say, in fact, it kind of alludes to the fact that you need to bring all that stuff with you that you did when you got your Real ID the first time. And you read it and you say, no, that can't be. I already did that. They know I qualify. And so anyway, I made a call. We actually spoke to somebody at the DMV. If you're renewing your Real ID, you don't have to bring in all the stuff a second time. You just get to renew it. You get the pass all the way through. So there you go.
Okay. So, and when you renew, now you're getting a Real ID. So, but for those of us who don't have, like I renewed mine early last year, I don't have a Real ID, so I would have to go back and do that again. Anyways, it doesn't if you've heard us talk about it before, we'll talk about it again. If it ever becomes a reality, then, and they get a firm date that they're going to stick by, why then everybody will have to abide by it. All right. One last thing here in the travel news before we go. I wanted to talk just for a minute, how the election may be likely to shift some travel policies a little bit. We have seen tremendous improvement in processing of visas and passports in recent weeks and months. So we can only hope that that will continue. That's something that if, as long as there's enough help, and they have hired enough help, so there's been some talk about cutting down the size of government. So as long as it doesn't impact the people who do that, we probably will still see some improvements there. In recent months, we've talked here about some consumer things that have been passed and that have not yet been implemented. Some of those could conceivably be rolled back. I think Chris Elliott is going to address those when we talk a little bit later on in the program. Chris is going to join us at 11:35, and he's going to talk a little bit about some of the ways that, good, bad, and otherwise, that the election may impact us. In terms of getting in, U.S. people getting in and out of the country, it's not going to be an issue. In terms of people from other countries getting in and out of the country, we'll have to see what happens. There's been a lot of discussion about immigration and about how the rules are not being abided by. And I think whether you're a donkey or an elephant, you probably agree that the immigration system is not the best, and that some tweaks need to be made to it in order to make it a little better, a little more fair, so that people who legitimately want to get into the country can, or people who want to come here to see the World Cup or to visit or something like that. Remember, folks, Shutting down inbound international visitors comes at a price because of all the things that we make and export to the rest of the world. The United States is our biggest export. It's our biggest positive balance of trade. People who come here spend immensely more money than we spend when we go there. So allowing visitors to come to the country and visit and spend their money and go home legitimately is really important to the economy of this country. So we would not want to see that get messed up. And there's not been any discussion about people who visit legitimately. I would like to see it stay so that people can get visas and things like that. So that I think if you make it easier for people to do those things legitimately, you cut down on the number of people who are looking to get into the country illegitimately. Anyway, just one man's opinion there. We'll talk more about that. I think in the weeks and months to come, we'll be able to get an idea here of how the change will impact travelers. Hopefully, not so much. And that's your travel news for today.
We're the Travel Guys. Check us out at TravelGuysRadio.com. Let's talk about catering real quick here. Did you know Rudy's Hideaway and Lobster House also has a catering department that can serve up anything from hamburgers and hot dogs to that filet mignon and lobster and, of course, that clam chowder Mark was talking about? Grace Taste of Rudy's can show up right at your doorstep. Or better yet, with their gourmet food truck, Rudy's on the roll, they can park in your driveway or park at your local park. Food truck specializes in lobster rolls and filet mignon tacos. And don't forget, when you go to Rudy's, you can order up the Travel Guy Special. $29.95 for a six ounce lobster tail with all the fixings. And there you go. That's the official commercial part of it. We love Rudy's. Rudy's Hideaway, right off of Highway 50 at Hazel. Mark, let's tell folks all about Check-In Chicken. Yeah, it's not like Chick-fil-A or something, is it?
No, it's not. It doesn't have anything to do with eating poultry. What this is it's a variation. They've given a name to something we've talked about before on the program. Airlines, the three major carriers, Delta, American, and United, they divide their plane into sections. There's first class, and then they've got an area where there's additional seating right behind first class, and then they've got what they call preferred seats, which means if you would prefer not to be in the back of the plane, you get to pay a little bit more for that. They don't have any extra legroom or any significance, but it's a way of guaranteeing yourself an aisle or a window and not having to pay as much as the extra legroom seats. And then there's the back of the plane where you buy a ticket and those are the back eight rows. And if you don't want to pay up for a seat, that's where you sit and you're done paying. What some people have figured out is that the airline, the seats that don't require any upgrade in the back will frequently sell out. So there might be 50 seats available for upgrades, but there are no seats available at the cheap price in the back of the plane. You buy a cheap seat in the back of the plane anyway, and you say, well, where am I going to sit? Well, the airline, they sold you a ticket. They have to sit you on the airplane. So here's what happens. All those people who don't have seating assignments, when we get anywhere from 8 to 24 hours ahead of time, the airlines randomly seat you on the airplane. In many cases, people are given seats. Obviously, if the free seats are sold out, they have to upgrade you on some level. You don't know what you will get. You might get an aisle, a window, a middle. You might get extra legroom. You might not. But the point is, you get it without having to pay for it. So that's what Check-In Chicken is. You're waiting until you're playing chicken with the airline until they get to the point where they're starting to assign those seats. Because if you go and you check in, then you've defeated yourself. So you buy a seat. You don't get a seating assignment, and you wait to see what the airline does for you. Now, there is a small chance that you could get bumped from the flight by playing that little game if they don't have enough seats for everybody. But then that comes with compensation of various types, so in some cases you would win there also. But Check-In Chicken is basically getting a ticket, not having a seat assignment. And this doesn't work with Southwest, obviously. It works with American, Delta, and United, and waiting to see. And you could get lucky. Heck, you could score an aisle seat up right behind first class. You're not going to get a first class seat because there are other people waiting for those, other people with status with the airline. But if you wait, you buy a ticket, and there are no free seats in the back for you, don't panic. What that means is that you're going to get something better at random later on in the process.
Wow, that is that seems a little risky for some people. Have you ever? I know you have status with United, and
with United.
But so, with that being said, have you ever done the check-in chicken thing?
I have not, but I know people who do, who have figured this out and do, and they say, look. You know, if you're in the back of the airplane, especially if you've got a tight connection, now you're moving up in the plane, so it makes it a little bit better for you. But the airlines have gotten greedy now, and you want to fly across country and get extra legroom. It's about $100 or so each direction. So that's a couple hundred dollars, and you could save that and still get one of those seats. You could be sitting right next to me. You know, maybe I paid for that upgrade, and you didn't. So did you also know that middle seats on airplanes have slightly more room than the aisle and window seats? Just a little bit.
I think I might have known that.
It's about half an inch or so, but that's where the extra space goes. It goes to the middle. Anyway, check-in chicken. You can give it a shot next time you buy a coach seat on an airplane.
All right. Time to hook up with consumer advocate and travel expert, Mr. Chris Elliott, all the way from Istanbul today. Good morning. Good afternoon. I don't even know what time is it there, Chris.
It's evening.
Good evening, then.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're doing well. Tell us a little bit about Istanbul before we jump into our topics today.
Oh, what a beautiful city. I am actually staying at the Conrad here, and I have a beautiful view of the Bosphorus and the bridge, and you can see the mosques in the distance. And over the last couple of days, I've been doing the, you know, the usual tourist things, seeing the Blue Mosque and the Grand Bazaar, and walking around Old Town and Hagia Sophia. It's been great.
Turkey has had a little bit of an issue with inflation and stuff, Chris. Is that impacting your visit at all?
Is that the value of the dollar from the last time I was here, which is in 22, the value of the dollar has actually increased. So this is one of those, you know, I wouldn't call it a bargain destination, but your dollar will take you much farther than it used to, and which is a great thing.
You said you've been a tourist the last couple of days in Istanbul. Give me one place that if you were in Istanbul and you had one day, what would you go see?
Oh, I would get a guide and hit the highlights. So the Hippodrome, the Blue Mosque, they're all right next to each other. Hagia Sophia, the Grotto, and the Grand Bazaar. And just hang out there because it's very, very historic. And there's fascinating stories. If you have a good guide, that guide will tell you, you know, the things that really went on there, which is really kind of cool.
Listen, I've got a few different subjects to ask you about here, but before we get started on the heavy stuff, you wrote about a week ago, free-range kids are becoming a problem at the airport. What's the solution? So what airport were you in where the children just terrorized you that caused you to write this particular?
I was in a Scandinavian country. Maybe I shouldn't name the actual country, but there were kids running around and misbehaving and having meltdowns on the floor, an unusual number of kids having meltdowns. And I thought to myself, this is really interesting. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm just going to do a little research on this and see if this is becoming an issue. So I started asking around, you know, asking my readers. And sure enough, they found that there are quite a few, there have been quite a few instances in the past. And even some that have gone viral, you know, like viral videos where children have done things, you know, they should have been supervised. They did things that they shouldn't have. And in some cases, in one or two cases, the plane had to turn around and make an emergency landing. One kid got stuck on a conveyor belt.
Oh, man.
That was a bad one, yeah. That actually happened in Chile, I believe.
I have a granddaughter, and she's three, and she is very fast. And you get her in a department store or in an airport, and you know she hasn't learned to stop and come back. Okay, it's not a yo-yo, and she'll just take off, and she won't even look back. And you'll be hollering, and then you be running.
Enough silliness here. Let's get on to some pretty to some subject with a little bit more meat here. Chris, we it looks like the automated cars without drivers may be more in our future than they have been in our past. We live close to San Francisco, which is where these robo-taxis have been used more than anything and not without incident. You talked about, you asked in one of your columns, would you hail a robo-taxi? So I ask you, I would say my answer to that is no, but I throw the question back at you. Would you hail a robo-taxi?
Oh, wow. You know, no one ever has asked me that question. I'm usually the one asking the questions here. Actually, they have pretty good safety records, so I might try it. But on a regular basis, I don't know. I like driving a car. I still do. I think that there will come a time when everything is automated and where driving a car is more of a privilege than anything. And I don't want that day to come too soon.
Do you think it'll be cheaper if we don't have a driver in the car?
It could be. I mean, I think that was the whole point of the announcement that Elon Musk made with this robo-taxi that we were talking about, is that it will be more cost-effective to have a robo-taxi than to have a driver drive you to all these places. And it'll also be safer. But, you know, Elon Musk has a little bit of a track record of over-promising and under-delivering, so I'm not so sure.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys, Mark and Tom, and with us our special guest, Chris Elliott, all the way from Istanbul, and talking about travel, and you're talking about AI cars that are going to drive themselves. What about planning vacations? If that's becoming something that AI does, is that the best bet, or should we stick to humankind?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you'll ever be able to replace a human travel agent. It's just there are some things that people will always be able to do better than machines. But that said, AI is making some pretty interesting advances. And there are some things that AI can do much better than a human, like generate an itinerary. And the problem, though, is the itinerary any good? If you're dealing with a human, you know that the itinerary is going to make sense. But if you're dealing with an AI, you might have, you know, an hallucination. It might add something to the itinerary that doesn't exist. And I've actually seen that happen a lot because I work with AI pretty frequently. And so it's not quite ready for prime time, but there are things that you can do.
You know, Chris, we just, and Tom, we just produced our annual catalog here at Sports Leisure Vacations. And most of my staff are in the 60 to 70 year old range, 50, 60, 70. I have one staff member who's under 30. So everybody's turning in their copy and stuff for the catalog. And the under 30 tour planner, who has just started planning his own tours and writing his own copy, turns in a one for a Kentucky itinerary. And it becomes immediately apparent to me when I get about three or four sentences into it, he didn't write this.
Yeah.
As a person who plans travel for groups of people on a regular basis, I can see a lot of things that AI is not quite ready for yet. But that doesn't mean that AI couldn't point you in the right direction or give you a list of people who might be able to provide the service that you want and some information that might help you make that decision. Chris, I have one more thing here before we let you go. We got ratings from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, about cruise ships here recently, and this happens on a fairly regular basis. But in this case, it got a little bit more press than it maybe does going around. We talked about it on the show here. What's your take? How important are these CDC ratings for cruise ships when it comes time for people to be making decisions, buying decisions?
You know, that's a great question, because usually when you see these ratings and you see a ship that hasn't done very well, the cruise line has really gone out of its way to make sure that the problem doesn't repeat itself. So there's almost an argument to be made that if a cruise ship doesn't do well, that you should try to be on that cruise ship, because you know that they're going to really do everything they can to stay clean. That said, it does also speak about a cruise line's overall commitment to health and sanitation. So if you're thinking about, if you still haven't booked a cruise and you're looking at this list and you see one cruise line mentioned more than once, it might actually be a symptom of a bigger problem, which is that the cruise line just doesn't give a hoot and is hoping that the inspectors will look the other way or just won't notice anything. And I think that that's really more the buyer's guide aspect of this, is that if you see a cruise ship that is a frequent offender, maybe it's good to avoid that cruise line altogether.
Yeah, use the list. And if a ship comes up twice in a row or two out of three, or to your point, mm-hmm. you know, I was a little bit surprised to see Princess and Carnival on the list. But to your point, a lot of these failures were just, they were small failures. They were very close to the passing number. So you would like to think that when somebody saw that, they would say, well, you know, we need to do better. And that they could go back and turn a score of an 84 into a score of an 89 or a 90 and pass the inspection the next time and get themselves off the list. I do think, however, this is perhaps an example of where it's good to have a little bit of government oversight, because this gives us information that allows us to make smarter traveler buying decisions. Whereas if we didn't have this information and we didn't have the Center for Disease Control issuing these ratings and doing these inspections, then we wouldn't have this information. And there were a couple of ships that really had dismal scores. Is there anything you would like to share with us about travel for 2026 or 2025 here in the next 30 seconds before we cut you loose in Istanbul?
Oh, well, after this election, it's going to definitely be an interesting one. All those consumer protections that people were so anxiously awaiting, some of them might actually get undone in the next administration. So we're going to be keeping our eye on that.
Wow. Yeah. We talked about that about a week ago, and now we'll just kind of have to.
They
wait
sat
and
around
see how
for
goes.
3 years, and then all of a sudden they got their, you know what, together, and passed a lot of really positive consumer things. But they waited so long to do it that some of them, you're right, Chris, they either won't be in effect yet, or won't have finished all of the process that lets them go into effect, and who knows what will be undone. You'd like to think, you know, a lot of these guys who work in Washington, D.C., no matter whether they're an elephant or a donkey, they have to ride airplanes on a regular basis, and they have to stay in hotels, and you would think that those experiences would help them understand what some of our challenges are and that they would be a little bit more on our side, but maybe that's just naive on my part. Listen, this has gone on far too long. Thank you so much for all of your time and information from Istanbul. Our best to your son, Aaron, and we'll catch up with you again somewhere down the road.
All right. You bet.
You know, that might be the first time. It is the first time, I'm sure, we've ever talked to anybody from Istanbul. Go look at the globe. That's like on the other side.
Yeah.
guy travels for a living. It's Chris Elliott. Many years ago, when the Sacramento Bee had a travel section on Sundays, Chris had a column that ran, and in fact, somebody who worked at the Bee told me that was one of the most popular features in the entire newspaper. So we are privileged to have him. By the way, if you are interested, you can find out more about what Chris does in consumer advocacy, or if you have a problem and you need some help with it, go to Elliott.org. That's two L's and two T's. Or there is a link to it at TravelGuysRadio.com. He also has some subscription things and stuff like that. So if you're really a travel geek like I am, why, then there's an opportunity to get better hooked up there with Mr. Elliott.
Okay, our new travel gal, name is Sydney Schellinger, and Sydney has a little company called The Poodle Booked It. We're going to talk to Sydney. We're going to talk about the changes and how things are different with Airbnb as it originally was and vacation rentals. A lot of stuff to make you a smarter traveler. Thanks for coming along. Don't forget now, links to our special guests today can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. We're bringing back one of our favorite travel girls. We call her the Travel Girl because we're the Travel Guys. And she's got a cool name. Her little travel company is called The Poodle Booked It. Because Sydney, welcome to the show. I understand that you don't really do much of anything. The poodle does it all.
Yeah, he just tells me where to go and what to do. That's kind of how it works.
I have this vision of the poodle sitting at the computer.
Absolutely.
While Sydney's having a martini over in the corner.
There you go.
And the poodle's doing all the work. All right, listen, we need to get rolling here. We don't have a lot of time today. Sydney has come up with some great information. We're talking about Airbnb, VRBO, vacation rentals. Sydney, you've kind of done some homework here and prepared some stuff for us. What about the, let's start with the cost. Hotel versus a vacation rental. How hotels have gone up in price considerably in the last couple, 3 years. How do those compare? How do you work with the cost of those two products?
I will also say Airbnbs have gone up tremendously as well. There are a lot of like extra fees into it, like when you're talking about the cleaning fees and things of that nature. I kind of compare it to Uber and Lyft versus a taxi. Taxis are now becoming cheaper and less confusing. I kind of use it as like taxis, you can go right out of an airport, and Ubers, you have to go to the parking garage, up three levels, get in a line. Same with hotels versus Airbnbs. Hotels have standard fees. They're usually where you want to be versus, you know, the Airbnbs, which probably will be like outside of town and things of that nature.
Good point. Good point. I find that when a few times I've stayed at Airbnb, that was an inconvenience compared to staying at a hotel near the destination of where you're going to go and do what it is that you're going to do. Let's talk a little bit about how things have changed, how much things have changed from the original concept of an Airbnb to what we're seeing now, people buying houses and turning them into Airbnbs. Let's take a look at that, if you would, Sydney.
You are actually seeing, and you have in the last couple of years, a huge increase of people buying properties solely for them to become Airbnbs. So instead of houses being used as long-term rentals for actual tenants, they're being used for the short-term rentals, Airbnbs, and things of that nature, which in terms of the community is really affecting like popular destinations and people's ability to live there. You can use Hawaii. You know, one of the huge ones that was in the news a lot, and I know you guys reported on it, was Barcelona and how they were fighting against tourism there. So this is becoming an issue in terms of having affordable housing for the locals when people are seeing Airbnbs as money-making opportunities versus just renting out your in-law suites or just rooms in your house, or when you're on vacation, you're renting it out yourself, which was the original purpose of Airbnb.
Now, Sydney, you have had some experience with clients, with friends, some Airbnb things that you can share. Not all of these, you know, you were talking about, you walk into a hotel, you go to the front desk, you say, hey, my name is Mark Hoffman, and you check in, they hand you a key and you go to your room, and hypothetically, it's all pretty cut and dried. With Airbnb and VRBO, it doesn't always work quite that simply. Can you explain that a little bit?
So, you know, with everything, there's risks. And so Airbnbs and VRBOs have had a lot of issues recently as well. For example, I had friends who went to go see Taylor Swift in New Orleans. And when Taylor first announced the concert in New Orleans, that was the first thing they did was get a Airbnb before they even got tickets to make sure that they could have an affordable place to stay. The host then later messaged her saying that they didn't pay enough money and that they were going to cancel her reservation, or they had to pay triple, which was kind of the going rate because Taylor was in town. They ended up canceling in general because they were so worried that the host would cancel last minute. Because that is definitely something that can happen, and there is not as much of a there isn't as much liability for the the host. If they cancel, there isn't much like repercussions for it.
So you have to be, in many cases, you have to be able to connect with a host or somebody in order to be able to get access to the property. Excuse my ignorance here, but I'm not an Airbnb type of guy, so I'm the hotel guy that goes to the front desk. So in some cases, you have to make that contact. What happens if you get overseas or something like that, and the contact is a no-show? I mean, does that happen?
That does. I am in a group, Girls Love Travel, on Facebook, and you see it all the time, where you'll see people who, you know, there's four girls going to Paris, and they, you know, off of a long flight, trying to get into their thing. They can't answer, the host isn't answering, like, the code to, like, check in isn't working, or it's not there. No one's answering, and so they're kind of stuck in a foreign country trying to figure out what they're going to do. And sometimes it's they have to pay triple to get a hotel. Airbnb will sometimes provide you with like a similar price location, but it's usually not going to be in the same part of town. It's probably going to be even further out because it's a last minute booking. So you have a lack of customer service as well when it comes to Airbnb, in making sure that you have that protection for you as the consumer, in my opinion.
That. And that's another, perhaps why I haven't gravitated in that direction is because I have a problem with a hotel. I can pick up the phone, call the hotel. I can call their corporate office. They've probably got a customer service number. You know, I may get blown off a little bit, but I see all these horror stories with Airbnb. Sydney, before we let you go here, what's the bottom line? What's the conclusion here? If somebody is out and they're not, you know, they're getting into the Airbnb game, what should they be on the lookout for?
So basically what I would say is, before assuming that an Airbnb is more affordable, which it might be, sometimes it is for longer stays or family reunions, check out hotels in the region. They will most likely be in the center of town where you want to be. They'll probably be more like fun restaurants or things to do around there. It's also better for the local community since you're not taking their own rental properties themselves, and more security and protection for you as a consumer.
Sydney, the poodle booked it. There's a link to her website on travelguysradio.com. If you need some assistance, you have a question about what we've been talking about, or you need some assistance booking a trip someplace, Sydney specializes in river cruises. She's a big boat person, ship person. They've explained to me one time the boat is the thing they lower when the ship is sinking. Sydney, thanks for your time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
She's always full of great information. Thanks, Sydney.
Yeah, that's you. Who would have known that Airbnb, when it started out, would get this complicated? But here's the deal. When these companies start up, Uber, Airbnb, and the like, my company was like this. I lost money the first 11, 12 years I was in business because you have to figure out what every time you figure out a cost, another one pops up. So these companies, same way, they figure out that, hey, you know, doing this ride sharing or this home sharing thing, it costs a lot more money than we thought it was going to cost, the administration of it and making sure that it works the way it's supposed to. And obviously some things have come up along the way. And who knew that companies were going to start buying houses and using them as vacation rentals? I mean, that wasn't the original concept. So they're having growing pains and figuring out their way through it. But I thought Sydney really did a great job of running down some of the challenges there. We're going to have to ask her what some of the solutions to some of those challenges might be the next time.
You know, the internet, our ability to use it and expand on it plays a big part as to how something like Airbnb can exist. But with it, of course, comes complications. Mm-hmm. I think that Airbnb early on was a much better product than it is now. If you want to have some fun sometime, here's a rabbit hole to go down. Go ahead and go onto the Airbnb site and punch up South Lake Tahoe.
Uh-huh.
And take a look at the variety of properties that are available for you to stay. I mean, whether you want a place big enough to sleep 18, or you want a little loft at the back of somebody's house, you name it, it's there.
Listen,
and here again, it's a little complicated.
We can also give you some more information on how you can. Airbnb is a whole. It's a whole nother world. You know, who knew that hotels would end up having some advantages that you hadn't ever thought about? Like, you know, you can walk into the front desk and get a key no matter what. So anyhow, something that we'll look at down the road, I'm sure. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching, and we will see you next week.
You bet. Stay well, my friends. Thanks for coming along with the Travel Guys.